Everybody loves the touchdown.
Scans the secondary, throws it over the middle, leaping grab is made at the goal line. He's in, yes! It's a touchdown for Greg Jennings!
The grand slam.
Fly ball to center field. Ethier has done it again. It's a grand slam!
The buzzer beater.
Gets it to LeBron for three for the win. Yes! LeBron James!
But how do those players get to that moment? And who built the venue and signed the contracts? Each week, we dig into the business side of sports and give you the answers. This is Sports Business Radio.
Come here, boy, can you get it up?
Now, here's your host, Brian Berger, on 95.5 The Game.
Well, thanks for checking out the only show in the country dedicated to covering the business side of sports. We're with you every Sunday from 9 a.m. to noon right here on 95.5 The Game. Visit my sports business blog or download the SBR podcast on demand. You can find those entities through the 955thegame.com website. You can find us online at sportsbusinessradio.com. You can always email me, Brian, B-R-I-A-N, at sportsbusinessradio.com. And I'm on Twitter. And I tweet a lot, at SB Radio. At SB Radio is my handle on Twitter. This hour of Sports Business Radio is presented by Berg Car Company. Visit them at 10680 Southwest Canyon Road in Beaverton. Go online to bergcarworld.com. Go see Neil Berg. Tell him that Brian Berger from Sports Business Radio sent you. All right. We're celebrating the 7th anniversary of Sports Business Radio this week, and as part of that celebration, we're going to look back on three of the most compelling interviews in our show's history. In hour one, like him or not, I think he's a genius. Dallas Mavericks owner Mark Cuban, he's really one of the most candid and opinionated people in sports. He's been very successful in business beyond just what he's done with the Dallas Mavericks. I mean, look, when he bought the Mavericks, they were one of the worst franchises in the NBA. Now they're one of the best as far as how they're operated. They've got, you know, a newer arena. They're a terrific brand. People like playing for Mark Cuban, and they like the facilities there in Dallas. And what's led to his success? He's going to share with us some of his business strategies and acumen and what's made him successful. This is a conversation I had with him back in 2006 when the Mavericks were actually in the finals against the Heat. And I wanted to replay that for you. That's going to come up at 9:15. And if you listen to this interview with Mark Cuban, I think you're going to come away going, you know what? I kind of like that guy. You know, he blabs to the referees and he gets fined all the time by the NBA. But at the end of the day, I can kind of relate to him. He's not as aloof or as far out there as some of the other billionaire owners that I can't relate to. I can relate to Mark Cuban. That's coming up 9:15. The other thing I want to try and get to in hour one, LeBron James this week. He wants to be a global icon. He's teaming with the owners of the Boston Red Sox, part of Fenway Sports Group. They're going to be marketing LRMR. So they're going to be marketing LeBron and LRMR, his marketing company, globally. We talk about authenticity in sports business and sports marketing. LeBron goes everywhere with a Yankees hat on. Now he's teaming with the Red Sox owners in the sake of money. He's also going to be part owner of Liverpool FC. How much does LeBron even know about soccer? This whole deal, it makes sense from a business standpoint, but it doesn't seem very authentic. So I want to talk about that at some point during our show today. In hour two, we're going to look back on my conversation with NCAA President Mark Emmert. He joined me on Sports Business Radio last October. With scandals marring the college sports landscape and with his work really cut out for him in the future, Emmert shared with us his management style and plans for the NCAA for the future. He talked about how he's going to be tough on people committing infractions. And Mark Emmert was the president at the University of Washington, right up the way on the I-5. And he cleaned up a messy program there. We're going to look back on my conversation with NCAA President Mark Emmert, which is still really relevant, coming up at 10:15. Then in hour three, it's my favorite conversation in the 7 years of hosting this show. He was candid, he was insightful, and quite frankly, they don't make them like they used to anymore. Jack Nicklaus. That's going to come up at 11:15. It's been 25 years since Jack Nicklaus stunned the sports world by winning the 1986 Masters at age 46. His son, Jack, was on his bag, caddying for him. He was four shots back entering the final round of that tournament. He shot a 65, four birdies and an eagle, shot a 30 on the back nine on Sunday to come out of nowhere to win his sixth green jacket and his final major, 18th major. So Nicklaus joined me on Sports Business Radio in 2008, and it's really a timeless conversation. It could have taken place this last week, and we talked about his golf course design company, his legacy, what he's meant to the game of golf, and even what the game of golf can teach us, what you learn about someone when you play 18 holes of golf with them. We covered a lot of ground. He was engaged in that conversation. I was mesmerized by that conversation. Quite frankly, Jack Nicklaus was my dad's idol. And Jack Nicklaus and Walter Payton, to me, are my two favorite athletes of all time. They exude class. They're family guys. They do things the right way. And that's why I say they don't make them like they used to anymore. If you haven't seen ESPN's 30 for 30 documentary on Jack Nicklaus that was airing this week, and it's about that final round of the Masters, age 46, you really want to watch it. It's really good. And it's phenomenal what he did at age 46. This is a guy who his top finish that year was 39th. I mean, people talk about Tiger being nowhere near winning. Jack was nowhere near winning, and he was 46 years old. The Atlanta Journal-Constitution wrote a story that week in 1986. He's washed up. What's he even doing here? Should he be playing at the Masters? And he goes out and he wins it. One of the greatest sports accomplishments, I think, that we'll see. I'm joined in studio by our producer, Bobby Corser, who has been with us for all 7 years of Sports Business Radio. Bobby, as we were discussing last week, some great conversations, and it's been a fun ride so far.
It's been a great ride, and you know, I'm really looking forward to kind of hearing these interviews. I haven't heard some of these for a while, but I love the Mark Cuban interview, especially the last 5 minutes. Pay attention to the last 5 minutes, because you really get to know the man that is Mark Cuban. So that's a highlight, and you know, we've talked to a lot of athletes on here, but none are as great as Jack Nicklaus.
Well, the Mark Cuban interview, you're right, the last 5 minutes are really good, and it's because it has nothing to do with business or sports. It's about him, about some things he did in college. He attended Indiana University, and he was surprised that I did my homework for that interview, and I pulled some things about him that he didn't see coming. And actually, if you're someone like Mark Cuban, you get a lot of the same questions all the time. So I threw him some questions that he hadn't gotten before, and we had really good dialogue around those. So that interview is coming up in minutes, 9:15. Mark Cuban, owner of the Dallas Mavericks. That's from our conversation in 2006. Again, we're looking back on some of our best conversations over the last 7 years. Before we go into the show, you know, I owe a lot of people a debt of gratitude for the last 7 years. First of all, Sports Business Radio co-founder Keith Foreman, who came up with the idea with me to start Sports Business Radio and kind of have a different angle on the world of sports, a smarter sports show, less jock talk. And it's resonated with people. And it's been really fun. Tim McNamara and James Derby, who used to work for Rose City Radio, they gave us our first opportunity to get on the airwaves. We came to them with this idea, and they said, you know what? That's pretty unique. What? David Stern's your first guest? All right, let's try this out. So we were on News Radio 750 KXL for the first year of our show before we got picked up for national syndication. And, you know, if it wasn't for Tim and James, probably wouldn't be sitting behind this microphone right now. And then two other people I've got to thank are Brian Jennings, the program director here at Alpha, and Bill Ashenden, who is a good friend of the show and has been with this company for a long, long time. They've believed in this show and the unique angles that we cover on this show, the big names that we have on this show. So I owe them a debt of gratitude as well. Bobby, Timbers. First game on Thursday. Media day is on Tuesday. I know you're going to be going to that. I'm going to try and make it over to that. But construction at the stadium mostly finished. A lot of people from Major League Soccer coming in from New York for this game. A lot of excitement for the first home game on Thursday at Gerald Wynn Field.
There's a lot of buzz in the city, and I really think even though the Timbers were not able to get a win last weekend in New England, the fact that they were able to get the draw and at least get a point kind of brought some spark back, because after they got manhandled the first two games, you know, two big losses, the fan base was kind of down, but driving by the stadium yesterday, finally seeing most of the construction done on the actual outside of the building. I know they're in the process of, they just installed the Gerald Wynn logo all over the field on the scoreboard in the front of the stadium. It looks good. They're ready to roll, and I'm really excited. Just kind of, you know, for me personally, I want to get into to Gerald Wynn Field. I just want to look around. So I'm used to it being PG Park. I'm used to it having the soccer and baseball setup, but I really want to see it now as just a soccer stadium.
Now, I'm looking forward to going on Thursday night, and, you know, here's a little tidbit that I learned from some birdies this week, Bobby. There's going to be some cross promotion between the Blazers and the Timbers. A lot of people think they're these organizations that are diehard competitors. They're going to be doing some cross promotion with each other, and I think that's really cool. The other thing is, if you look at guys like Rudy Fernandez and Nicholas Batum, they're big soccer guys. They're from other countries. They might be appearing at some Timbers games, and you might see them doing some Timbers promotions. And I think there could be some really good synergy between the two organizations, the Blazers and the Timbers. And, you know, I know there have been some that have written that there's friction between the two, but that's not what I'm seeing. I'm seeing some cooperation, and, hey, we're rooting for you, and you're rooting for us. And the seasons aren't really competing with each other. So I think it's great.
If there was friction, you would not see somebody like Nicholas Batum show up to practice at the Blazers practice facility wearing a Timbers jersey.
Right.
So, you know, why there might be a little friction somewhere, it's just not. And listen, the seasons overlap barely. There's no worries about, you know, listen, Blazers are making their move into playoffs. Timbers are just starting their season. There's no major overlap here. And you know what? They have to compete with each other. They just do. But you know what? They also get along really well with each other, because you know what? The common fan that goes to a Blazer game is also the common fan that's going to go to a Timbers game.
No, I agree. And I think it's great, and I'm looking forward to Thursday night at Gerald Wynn Field. All right, coming up next, Mark Cuban, owner of the Dallas Mavericks. He's candid. He's outspoken. He's got some really terrific business philosophies. People can criticize him, but listen to his business philosophies and then judge him. That conversation coming up next. You're listening to Sports Business Radio. I'll be right back.
This is Sports Business Radio. Join us Monday, 9 a.m. till noon for Jim Rome, only on The Game.
One-on-one with those making the big-time decisions that impact your sport. This is Sports Sense on Sports Business Radio.
Sports Business Radio.
My guest today is a man who has taken a once mediocre franchise and turned them into one of the most thriving franchises in all of sports. Dallas Mavericks owner Mark Cuban. Mark, thanks for joining me.
My pleasure.
So, Mark, let's go back to the year 2000. The year before you bought the Mavericks, they were 40-42. Fan interest was pretty lukewarm. When you bought this team, what did you see in this team? What was the potential that you saw to get them to where they are today?
Probably none. Actually, when I bought the team, it was mid-season in January 2000, and they were 9-23, hadn't been to the playoffs in more than 10 years, and actually had been voted the worst professional sports franchise of the 90s.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, and you know, for everybody was like, "Are you crazy? You overpaid. What were you thinking?" And, you know, for me, it wasn't a business investment first, but, you know, you looked at it and you thought, you know what, in situations like this, there's only one direction things can go, and that's up. And so I looked at it and said, okay, let's see what I can do. And, you know, all you can really do is do what you know. And I just tried to bring the same business principles that have worked for me in other areas to the Mavs.
So how did you change the mindset? Because like you said, you know, this was a losing organization, and a lot of organizations have gone through many years of losing, and they're never quite able to change that mindset with the players, the fans, the sponsors, the community. How did you change the mindset? What did you do specifically?
You know, again, I tried to take the same business principles. I looked at the culture of the organization, which was very simply one of survival. It's like, how are we going to get through the next game? Please let us not embarrass ourselves. Please let people show up. You know, from a sales perspective, they waited for the phone to ring. And I said, you know what, guys? That's just not going to cut it anymore. I've got two jobs, and the first is to set the vision of this organization. And from now on, you know, the business side of things in terms of fans and our customers, we can't control whether the Mavs win or lose, but we can control the experience they have in the arena. And we're going to invest in that to make sure that it's fun. I want it to be like a good wedding, you know, the kind where people are drinking and dancing and having fun and shouting and screaming, and then you kind of forget who actually got married. So we started within the stands. We started with the sales force. They had like five salespeople. And I was like, you know, we were in a reunion arena at the time. I was like, we have to sell 17,000 tickets 41 times for 41 games. And if I have to hire 17,000 salespeople all to sell 41 tickets, that's what we're going to do. But I set up a sales organization where we hired, you know, like 40 people. I put my own desk right in the middle of all the salespeople, and I got there early, and I started making cold calls. And I said, you know what, we have $8 tickets, we have $10 tickets. For, you know, you could go have a Big Mac, fries, and a large drink, or you can go to the Mavs game. That's how inexpensive we are. But we do a terrible job of communicating that, so we're going to get on the phone, and we're going to start letting people know that we're a great value. And then from the team perspective, you know, I tried again to take the same approach. We had, you know, I looked at the technology business I had come from and said, okay, we invest millions of dollars in hardware and software and backup systems, and then we spend money on training. Here, the basketball business, professional sports business, we spent money on millions of dollars on athletes, but we gave them no support. It was kind of like the conventional wisdom was, you're getting paid all these millions of dollars. You figure out how to be the best at your job. And to me, that was crazy. So I took a lot of flack, but I told our players I was going to put them in a position to succeed. I was going to make their job, their lives as easy as possible so they could focus on their jobs. I brought in, you know, tons of assistant coaches that I really didn't. I paid my assistant coaches less than I paid people that I used to train on Microsoft Word or Microsoft Excel or software products, but I brought them in to give our players one-on-one attention. And then I told our players, I said, if you don't give me everything you got, because I'm going to give you everything I can.
Right.
If you don't give me everything you got, you're going to be gone.
So,
and that kind of became a self-weeding process.
It right.
Weeded out the guys who weren't willing to work and let us evolve.
You're such a passionate owner. Some people have been critical of you because you're in the huddle and you're around the team and you travel on the plane, but I think that gives you a unique perspective. How has that perspective and that closeness allowed you to make personnel decisions?
Well, you know, it's funny because you're exactly right. People gave me a lot of grief about it, and in reality, if you think about it, okay, if you had a business, I don't care if you're selling widgets or what you're selling, and your most expensive widgets were all in the room at the same time, and your best widget salespeople were all in a meeting at the same time. As CEO of that company, would you face criticism for being in the meeting or not being in the meeting?
Right, for not,
you know,
being in the meeting.
That those meetings are every huddle that takes place in an NBA game. And, you know, you look at a lot of NBA teams that haven't had success, and, you know, they go through coach after coach, they go through player after player, and when you look at the decision-making process, it's always one or two or three steps removed. It's an owner relying on multiple people that really, those people, their self-interest is just in keeping their job. That was one of the most expensive lessons I learned, and probably I was lucky in being around the huddles, and that expensive lesson was the number one job of a general manager or coach in the NBA is not to win championships. It's to keep their job. You know, it's kind of like a politician. There's only 30 positions that pay millions of dollars and let you work 6 months a year.
Right.
You know, and do you want to lose that job or do you want to win a championship? And what that led to was, you know, people, it's a clubby business. It's a fraternity business where, you know, one coach, you'll see if he goes from team to team, he'll take all his coaches from the former team with him, or
right.
his trainer or strength coach. And so, you know, the industry realizes that, and so they kind of insulate themselves and make decisions accordingly. And so I said, you know what, that's not going to work. I have to change that. And the only way I'm going to understand what's going on is to be as close to the real people that get the job done, and that's the players and the coaches while they're doing their job. Just like, you know, I would go on a sales call to help our salespeople, I would sit with programmers. I would sit with engineers. You know, I would visit customer installations of technology to see for myself what's going on. Well, you know, you apply the same principles to a basketball team, and that means you're where the rubber meets the road, which is right where the huddle is, right?
Right. Absolutely.
That helped me make the decisions.
That's a great perspective. More of my conversation with Mark Cuban coming up next. You're listening to Sports Business Radio. Now back to my conversation with Mark Cuban. Mark, you're a businessman. You're a successful business person. What are the 2 to 3 cornerstones for building a good business, whether it's sports or anything else?
Oh, my goodness. I've got my own little set of rules, right?
And it's worked pretty well for you.
Yeah, so far so good. You know, first of all, you've got to be the smartest guy when you walk in the room when it comes to your business. There's, you know, put aside professional sports, because I can't hit the jumpers. I can't, you know, make the steals.
Sure.
You know, so put that aside. But in a business, no matter, and let's talk, you know, most smaller businesses, you know, if it's your baby, if it's your business, you've got the ultimate responsibility. And if you don't know your business better than, you know, somebody's out there that's going to kick your butt.
Right.
You know, you've always got to work from the perspective that there's some 12-year-old kid trying to come up with a better technology, or a 30-year-old guy or woman who is trying to take your business from you and just trying to kick your ass. And if you work from the perspective that someone's trying to kick your butt, you know, that'll incent you to be the smartest guy in the room and to be prepared. So that's rule number one. And rule number two is don't lie to yourself. We so often, particularly if you're starting a business, you know, people tend to oversell themselves. Well, if I only get 1% of this industry, I talk to all these people and they love my idea. I have these 3 customers. They love my product. And rather than being brutally honest and telling yourself what's wrong with your product so you can fix it and make more people happy, you tend to focus on what's right about your product, which, you know, you want to do when you're selling. You don't want to tell a potential customer what's wrong with your product. You want to tell them what's right and also be honest where it's not a fit. But you've got to be brutally honest about your own products, your own services, your own core competencies, what you can do well and what you can't, and then work to fix what doesn't work, because you're not going to be the only one looking. If I'm competing with you, if Mark Cuban is competing with your business, I'm trying to find a way to kick your butt, and I'll find what's wrong with it. And if I find it before you do, then you're going to have a hard time competing. And I'd say third rule, and I'll leave it at that, is that sales cures all.
Yeah, sure does.
You know, I've never seen a company succeed that has no sales.
Right.
And, you know, people gave me a lot of grief about, oh, broadcast.com, when you sold it to Yahoo, you were lucky, this and that. What people didn't realize is it wasn't just about streaming sports over the Internet. Where we made our money and made our sales was selling the value of real-time communications over the Internet. You know, corporate webcasts to their customers, to prospects, to their employees, whatever it may be. And to do that, we had probably one of the 5 largest sales forces on the Internet at the time when, you know, back in 1999, to have 130-plus salespeople feet on the street selling these services, that was huge. And that was really our core competency, selling the value of real-time communications. Or the example I gave with the Mavericks, you know, 5 salespeople versus 40. Now, you know, in the NBA, it used to be, you know, 5 was the norm. Now, you know, however many salespeople it take has become the norm. They've copied after us. So sales cures all is probably the biggest rule.
Mark, we've got just a few minutes left. Who's your biggest influencer, mentor, when it comes to business? Is there someone that you look up to?
Not really, no. I mean, I look to what people have done and what has worked and try to learn from it. I try to, you know, just ravenously consume as much information as I can. You know, I've tried to see the things that Bill Gates did when Microsoft was rolling, that Michael Dell did. I mean, I always give the story of Michael Dell when he was first starting his company, his PCs Limited, out of his dorm room in Austin. There used to be this magazine called PC Week. And while everybody else was trying to squeeze every dollar they could out of a retail sales price as price of electronic components went down, Michael Dell, on the other hand, took out full-page ads in PC Week, mm-hmm. selling hard drives and memory and all this stuff. But every single week, the prices would go down to reflect what was happening in the industry rather than him trying to squeeze out another nickel of profit. And he became kind of the de facto pricing index, and his business just took off from there. So kind of going against the norm and looking for people who went against the grain and had great ideas is really what I look for, as opposed to individuals mentoring me.
So, Mark, you've done wonders with the Mavericks. There are rumors floating all the time that you may be looking to buy another sports franchise at some point. The Penguins, the Pirates, the Cubs have been mentioned as possibilities. What's the timeline? Do you want to own another team, or do you have your hands full with one team and everything else you've got going on?
I mean, I'd love to own an iconic team like the Cubs,
yeah,
or the Pirates, being Pittsburgh in particular because it's my hometown.
Right.
But it's not something that I have to do. It's something that I think I could use what I've learned with the Mavs and help an organization. I don't even necessarily have to be the lead investor. I just think it would be fun to be part of to own a baseball team, or just be part of a group owning a baseball team. But you know, the way the industry has evolved and the pricing and everything, and the fact that, you know, the Cubs in particular are owned by a public corporation, I think it's going to make it very difficult.
Boy, I'm a Cubs fan. I'd love to see you own the Cubs.
Yeah, you know, well, you know how it works. I mean, you're a business guy. You know that because the Tribune's a public company, it's basically going to – they'd have to get a banker and put it in a book,
right,
and put out the bid. And there's so much private equity money out there right now that the price is going to be obscene.
So,
if they sell it.
Time for two more questions, and I know you're going to love this one. If you were the NBA commissioner for a day, what would you change?
I'd increase the marketing budget by 50% or more. I think – you know, in this era of entertainment, we all recognize that basketball, the NBA, is entertainment first and foremost, and you have to get out there and really market it. I think the folks that are marketing the World Cup, you're seeing those World Cup ads everywhere, and they're doing a great job, yet here we are with the NBA Finals even closer, and you're not seeing near the visibility of promotion as you do at the World Cup, and I think that's not one of our strong points. We're better than we used to be, but not nearly as good as we could be.
So my last question, our crack research staff tells me that in your early business career, you worked as a garbage bag and powdered milk salesman, and you even taught disco dancing lessons. Which was the harder sales job?
Powdered milk. I failed it. You know what? I thought people would give up a little bit on taste to save enough money. No, saving 40 cents on a gallon of milk or 30 cents on a gallon of milk, it wasn't enough incentive to drink nasty milk. So I learned my lesson. And the disco lessons, hell, I'd take that job back in a minute. given dance lessons to sorority girls for $25 an hour.
Were you wearing like the Travolta getup too?
No.
What did you wear when you're teaching the disco lesson?
Oh, just your basic, you know, T-shirt and jeans and that type
no
of
sequins,
stuff.
Nothing like that?
No. It was more about getting paid to you know, forget the disco. I would teach them how to slow dance as much as I could.
That's why you're a smart business person. Mark, I know you're super busy. I wish you the best of luck in the NBA Finals. Guests appearing during our SportsSense segment will be treated to the gold standard of all steakhouses, Morton's The Steakhouse, the best steak anywhere. For the Morton's nearest you, go online to www.mortons.com. Again, Mark, thank you very much, and I'd love to have you on again in the future.
You got it, bud. Thanks, man.
Thank you. You're listening to Sports Business Radio. We'll be back with our final segment.
We talk to the people who call the shots. This is Sports Business Radio on 95.5 The Game.
We are back, and I hope you enjoyed my conversation with Dallas Mavericks owner Mark Cuban. You can find that on demand at sportsbusinessradio.com. But seriously, after listening to that, do you have a different view of Mark Cuban? He's not a bad guy. He's pretty smart. He's been very successful in business. He sold powdered milk and taught disco dancing lessons at Indiana. I mean, come on. That's kind of fun stuff. But he talks about, you know, people get upset with him. He's in the huddle. He's involved in a lot of the stuff. But you know what? If you're running a company, there's the fine line between micromanaging and wanting to know what's going on with your company. And as he said, the board meetings taking place are the huddles. Those are the meetings. Your CEO, your coach, is meeting with the other people on the board, your players. I don't know. I think Mark Cuban has done amazing things with the Mavericks.
He took them from a train wreck franchise to what they are now. I think he's been very successful in other business ventures, and I've always thought the guy is brilliant. I know there are other people that don't agree with me, but at the end of the day, Bobby, I think he's a pretty sharp guy.
I do too, and you know what? You know, he's a human being, and he's kind of living out what everybody wishes they had. They wish they had their own NBA franchise, and you know what? Guess what? The playoffs kind of shake out the way they think they will. We'll be seeing a lot more of Mark Cuban in Portland come playoff time. So, you know, if you guys want to, you know, make a giant sign that says I have powdered milk for sale, you know, that'd be kind of cool to show it in the stands. But, hey, listen, the guy has worked hard. He's busted his butt. He's made his money legitimately. I have no beef with the guy.
All right, there's another guy who makes lots of headlines and is very controversial that made some news this week. LeBron James, NBA player, signs a deal with Fenway Sports Management. Fenway Sports Management, based in Boston, owns the Red Sox. So you've got John Henry and Tom Warner, who are the owners of the Red Sox. Well, Henry and Warner also own Liverpool FC, soccer club. They also, through their Fenway Sports Group, they work with lots of big companies, and they even have a racing team, Roush Fenway Racing. So they're a very diverse group of individuals, and they've been looking for a global icon, as they put it, like LeBron James, to market internationally. They think he can open some doors for them in Asia. They think Liverpool can open some doors for LeBron in Europe. Makes a lot of business sense that, you know, someone like LeBron would say, Tom Henry, or John Henry and Tom Warner have been very, very successful business people. I want to align myself with them. I mean, look, LeBron knows Warren Buffett really well. He has a well-documented relationship with Jay-Z, who's been a very successful business person. I have no problem with this relationship. The problem where, you know, we look at relationships like this and we say, are they authentic? Are they just being done for money? LeBron James walks around in a New York Yankees hat all the time. He's professed his love for the Yankees. He's friends with CC Sabathia, pitcher, Yankees. Even when he played in Cleveland, he went to an Indians-Yankees playoff game with a Yankees hat on. Now, the guy's climbing into bed with the Red Sox. And if there is a more heated rivalry in sports between the Yankees and the Red Sox, I'm not sure who it is, Bobby. And you look at this and you go, well, what does this mean for LeBron? And you know, what are John Henry and Tom Warner going to think when they see LeBron walking around in Yankee hats? And when he's touring Europe, he's in a Yankee hat. I don't know. There's something about it that doesn't feel right to me. But from, you know, just a dollars and cents standpoint and exposing LeBron's brand abroad and Fenway Sports Group and the owner of the Red Sox being able to open doors for him and him being able to open doors for them, it makes sense. But just at the basic level of authenticity, on the surface, it doesn't seem to make sense.
I'm sure that they are shipping massive amounts of Red Sox hats to LeBron and saying, hey, listen, I know you're a Yankees fan, but for the term of the deal, you know, you can come like the Red Sox too. But, you know, you're right. There is no bigger company that can market LeBron better than these guys on overseas basis, period. I mean, we have shoe companies that we talk about all the time that are overseas, but they're strictly overseas and they have no penetration in the U.S. market, or there are U.S. companies that have very little penetration overseas. This company is not one of those. These guys have the ability to get LeBron's brand out there, and I really think it's going to help him, and it's going to help, you know, Fenway Sports Group. It's a mutual scratch my back, I scratch yours type deal.
Fenway Sports Group president and Red Sox executive VP and COO Sam Kennedy said, and I quote, "We recognize that there are strong, passionate followers of the Celtics among Red Sox fans. But what's most important is to win on the field. And to do that, we have to drive revenues to the Fenway Sports Group." This is after, again, criticism that heat forward LeBron James, who's a noted Yankees fan, there might be some backlash from Red Sox fans saying, hey, owners, what are you doing crawling into bed with the enemy? Guy's a Yankees fan. And the Sox fans, they don't like the Yankees, and vice versa. The other thing about this is that's interesting to me is LRMR. So the CEO is Maverick Carter, who is high school friends with LeBron. And I got to know Maverick when I did some work for Nike. Maverick was an intern when Nike was recruiting LeBron. And Maverick's a decent guy, but I've always said he's way in over his skis. You're trying to cut business deals for a guy who could be a global icon, one of the best basketball players in the world. Just because you're his high school buddy doesn't qualify you to make those deals. Just because you interned for a summer at Nike doesn't make you qualified to cut those deals. Now, I will give Maverick some credit because he's built some good relationships over the years. LRMR also does marketing for Hornets guard Chris Paul, who's a very good friend of LeBron's. They also do marketing for Ted Ginn Jr., who played at Ohio State and now, I believe, plays for the 49ers. So they rep some athletes. To me, part of this deal is LRMR saying, you know what? Maybe we're not as good as we thought we were. And we need Fenway Sports Group, and we need the expertise of John Henry and Tom Warner to open those doors internationally. Now, LRMR has done some blue chip deals for LeBron that result in about $30 million annually for LeBron. McDonald's, Coca-Cola, and obviously Nike. LeBron every summer goes to Asia with Nike. He's not nearly as popular in China and in Asia as Kobe Bryant. And I've been over, I spent a day in 2007 with Kobe in China. And let me tell you what, Kobe Bryant is a rock star. He's Michael Jackson-esque in China. LeBron, not there yet. And one of the big reasons is in China, they love you if you're a champion. Michael Jordan, rings. Kobe Bryant, rings. LeBron, the ringless king. No rings. So a lot more doors will open for LeBron in China once he wins a ring, if he wins a ring. They like his product. They think it's cool that he comes over and they go to his events, and it's smart of Nike to continue to take him over there every summer. And as we've discussed on past shows, China is an emerging market for professional athletes. It's an untapped market. But this is an interesting deal on many, many fronts. The other news with LeBron James this week, not so good. His mom arrested early Thursday morning by Miami Beach police after she reportedly assaulted a valet worker because it was taking too long to have her car delivered. This is where I feel bad for LeBron. And I've got a little insight here. I've met Gloria James. I've been around LeBron and his entourage a little bit. And I actually feel badly for LeBron. His mom has been a train wreck since he was a kid. And what a lot of people don't know is LeBron has really had to take care of his mom. She's had addictions. She's had run-ins with the law. And it's been a rough ride for her, and because of that, a rough ride for him. And he was asked to be an adult at a very young age. And when things like this happen, I just kind of shake my head. And, you know, one of the reasons I'm convinced that LeBron left Ohio is because he wanted to get away from his mom. He raised her. He took care of her. He wanted to spread his own wings, get a new start. He had always lived in Ohio. And he said, you know what? I got to get out of here. I got to get away from mom. Well, now mom obviously is in Florida. And she makes negative headlines this week. And you wonder, is that going to affect LeBron going into the playoffs? We'll see. But these things certainly do not help his image. They don't help his state of mind. And, you know, it's a sad story because you've got child basically taking care of parent. All right, coming up in our next hour, Mark Emmert, the president of the NCAA. He used to be the president at the University of Washington. I caught up with him last October. We're celebrating 7 years of Sports Business Radio today. We're sharing with you some of my favorite conversations. We had Mark Cuban this hour. Mark Emmert coming up at 10:15, and then at 11:15, my favorite conversation in 7 years of doing this show, the legend, the icon, Jack Nicklaus on Master Sunday. You're listening to Sports Business Radio. We'll be right back.
This is Sports Business Radio. Check back Monday, noon to 3 p.m. for the John Lund Show on The Game,